Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerby. I was diagnosed with breast cancer 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-new, oncogene, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How can you decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say those words and find out what they mean. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you for tuning in. You can follow me at Joy Keyes on Twitter, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@hotmail.com. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are past 147,000 downloads of the podcast. Wow, could not have done that without your support. So, again, thank you for listening and tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the shows, learned some things, had a couple of laughs, and will continue to come back and listen to the wonderful guests that I have on the show. Well, right now, I'm going to have a wonderful journalist who works for the New York Times. Her name is Rachel Swarns, and she wrote a book called American Tapestry, the story of the black, white, and multiracial ancestors of Michelle Obama. Let me just read a little bit here from her book. I've brought along a DNA collection kit that includes two cotton swabs that look a little like toothbrushes and two small vials for storing those swabs after the test is complete. I explained that I have tracked down several descendants of the white man who owned Dolphus when he was a young slave boy. I hope to persuade some of them to take DNA tests, too. If we compare the results, we just might be able to determine whether that white slave owner or someone in his family was Dolphus's father. That would make him one of Jewel's ancestors and one of the first ladies, too. Jewel nods, fascinated by the prospect of the shared relations. Wouldn't that be something, she says. Well, the book is surely something, and I believe Rachel is on the line right now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you have done an amazing job with this book. I mean, the level of detail and the macro scenery that you give and fill out along with Michelle's ancestors is just wonderful. I just want to commend you on the research.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I had Isabel Wilkerson on. She had done the book Warmth of Other Suns, and she talked about the migration of African Americans up north, and you deal with that a lot in your book. What triggered this interest in writing this book in the first place?
I am a reporter for the New York Times based in Washington, and this book emerged from my time covering Michelle Obama and the first family in 2009.
And so you were not able to interview her, is that correct?
Right. Yes, it's a very sad thing for those of us writing about the first lady. She has a policy of not doing interviews for books, but I was able to interview some of her relatives who were really helpful, an aunt, an uncle, great aunt, great uncle, cousins, and I briefed her staff along the way.
Well, you did a wonderful job, like I said, and you've talked about several key characters. One of the key characters is Melvinia, and she had a son, well, actually more than one, but the son that is connected to Dolphus is Michelle's great-great-grandfather, and he was light enough to almost pass as white. What was one of the most interesting things you might have found out about Melvinia?
Well, Melvinia was the First Lady's great-great-great-grandmother, and she was born into slavery. She was a slave girl valued at $475 in 1852, and she is one of the ancestors that we've been able to identify who is farthest back in the First Lady's history. She appeared in a will in the 1850s. And her son, Dolphus, was biracial. And so a big question that the book is built around is, who was the white man who fathered Dolphus? And what happened to Melvinia? Was she raped? What happened to her? And these are really hard questions that a lot of African Americans have bubbling up around in their histories. And the First Lady had long suspected that she had white ancestry, but she didn't know who those people were. And I was able to solve that mystery with this book.
Well, one of the key things that you talk about is this silence around history in African-American families for either shame reasons or maybe they actually don't know what happened to their ancestors. But in this case, there was some issues of shame. And even in you trying to get DNA, you did have some troubles. Everybody wasn't really happy trying to go back on either side, the African-American side or the white side. How did you entice people? I mean, was there something you think you might have said that maybe changed somebody's mind because you had an anonymous a donor?
That's right.
Who did give, and that was like a key factor. How did that person finally decide to participate?
Both for blacks and whites in this country, even today, this is a hard history for people to grapple with, and a lot of people would prefer not to look back, frankly. And for the black members of the First Lady's family, over time, they just didn't talk about. They didn't talk about slavery. They didn't talk about discrimination. They didn't talk about the violence the racial violence that raged around them at times. And one of her uncles even said, you know, I tried. I'd ask and ask, you know, these were old people who he thought would have known, and he said he just couldn't get anywhere. And then for the descendants of the family, the white family that owned the First Lady's ancestors, a lot of them didn't know either. They grew up without having a clue that they had white ancestors. And so for some of the white members of that slave-owning family, those descendants, some of them really wanted nothing to do with this. So some of them didn't want to be interviewed. Several of them refused to do DNA tests. Over time, as I got to know people over time, some people became willing over time. And I think really they were curious themselves. They wanted to know. They wanted to know whether this was a part of their history, whether they were related to this first African American First Lady who's living in the White House.
Your book wasn't trying to point fingers. It was really, like I said earlier, the historical scholarship is wonderful. You really tried to give, I think, a balance on her maternal side, the First Lady maternal side, and also the paternal side. One of the interesting characters, if you will, for me, was Frazier Jr. That's Michelle's grandfather, Frazier Robinson II. He was really interesting. And the reason I say that is because he refused to pay for his son's education, but he paid for his daughter's education.
He was a complicated man. He was, the golden boy of his community in South Carolina. A really excellent scholar, had a beautiful voice, who sang in the choir. You know, he dreamed of becoming an electrical engineer, and he graduated from college and moved to Chicago, like so many African Americans were, hoping to find the promised land and to fulfill his dreams. And instead, he landed right in the middle of the Depression, and he struggled in a way that many people struggled, but for him it was really, really devastating because he had come with so much promise and so many dreams. And, he ended up being a bit of a hard man in a lot of ways. So his in-laws described him as an Einstein because he was so smart, so thoughtful. But at the same time, he left his family, his wife and his children, went off to the war, and even,
But that's a familiar story there, going off to the war. A lot of African-American soldiers and also entertainers were able to go overseas and be accepted, they felt, as full human beings.
And
not as a black person,
That's right. And
yeah,
then and
so
his family talks about that. But he left his family, though, like left them, like, you know, he left his wife.
He deserted them, yes. Mm-hmm.
And was gone from the family for a long time. And
yeah.
And yes, he did. And some of his sons to this day still feel some sense of resentment that he was unwilling to pay for their
decisions.
Yeah.
Another great character is Phoebe. She kind of opens the book in a way, and she was her great-great-grandmother.
Great-grandmother. Great-grandmother,
okay. And on the father's side. And she went to several cities. I mean, even today, as a woman, you know, traveling around, you have to be careful. Like, you know, I had this dream about traveling across the country with one of my girlfriends. And, you know, we kind of paused a little because we're like, wow, we have to go to this state, and then, you know, we're African-American. That might, even today, you know, this is 2012, like, is that going to be safe? What should we bring? Talk to the audience just a little bit about Phoebe and her travels. And she was also married to another traveler, if you will, James Preston Johnson, who, in a sense, also left the family, unfortunately. But tell the audience a little bit about Phoebe.
Phoebe really spoke to me in a lot of ways, just for those reasons that you described. She was a woman who was born after slavery, 1879, the sharecropper's daughter, who just saw a different kind of life for herself. And so in her 20s, she traveled to several cities, and she told her children that she had decided that she never wanted to go back to farming life, and she did not. She was among the first of the First Lady's family members, her ancestors, to see the skyscrapers of Chicago in 1908. And she and her husband, who was also a bit of a traveling man, lived in Hyde Park on the south side of Chicago in 1918, just a few blocks where the Obamas have their home today. She was, I think, quite a remarkable woman, quite ahead of her time.
Now, this issue of racism also at different time periods and the violence that people had to deal with, one of the really jarring parts is Chapter 5 about exploding dreams. This was when the bombing between 1970 and 1921, 58 homes of black families and those of white men who sold houses to African Americans were bombed.
That's right.
And
that's
this is
interesting.
The same feasible for us today to think, okay, somebody's going to bomb my house because I'm African American.
It's remarkable. And in fact, you know, people, this was in Chicago, right? So people had moved to Chicago hoping to escape, you know, segregation and the violence of the South. But, you know, there was resentment and resistance from whites to the growing numbers of African Americans coming to these places. And so Phoebe, the First Lady's great grandmother, and her family moved into Hyde Park, and it was a big step up for them, but the white community was actively trying to move out, force out African Americans like the First Lady's great grandmother. And so she and her family lived in this community that literally was trying to bomb them out. And she also lived during the Chicago riots. And her son remembers her talking about it. People were being beaten and killed, pulled out of cars, and
the street. One story you talked about, the police actually helped the mob
come
into somebody's home.
That's right.
Now, I want to tell the audience that this woman had, I think she had about 11 or 12 kids, and about three of them died, though, if I'm correct.
That's right.
Due to illness. That's another issue that's brought up through the book and that we need to be grateful for today, is the issue of health and how so many of Michelle Obama's relatives died, unnecessarily so, but due to, you know, sanitary conditions at the time, due to, you know, not having different types of innovations that we have nowadays, access to at very young ages, 30, 40, just collapsing. I think Purnell.
That's right.
Who is,
not Purnell, but his father, Robert Lee.
Father died at 30 or something. Yeah, but Purnell is Michelle Obama's maternal grandfather.
Right.
And he was a jazz man.
That's right.
I liked him because you said that he gave Michelle Obama her first Stevie Wonder album.
That's right.
Which I thought was like, oh, just like, you know, warm tear came to my eye. But she had two different sides. That side of Purnell, the maternal side, seemed a little more laid back. The men on the paternal side seemed very hardened somehow. I'm not sure if you would agree with that or
that's right. Frazier, her paternal grandfather, was a very stern and severe man in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Purnell, her maternal grandfather, was the guy who was the charismatic guy who could bring everyone together. He loved music. He loved barbecue. They said when he started grilling, you know, the whole neighborhood could smell it.
He had a can and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were different, very different personalities.
Well, let's get back to Dolphus. This is one of the key characters in the book. And he is Malvinia's son. Now, Malvinia had another son, Henry, but they were at different ends of the spectrum. I mean, Dolphus seemed like had the world like a silver spoon in his mouth, so to speak, even though he didn't. But, you know, he
rose
to such heights for the time period. You know what a really nice story in there was that Malvinia and Mariah, they were both slaves.
Right.
And at the time, many people may know this history. You know, slaves are separated, children are sold off, you know, friends are you know, go to across the country. You rarely get to see that person again. But a nice story that you were able to find is that Malvina and Mariah were able to connect again because Dolphus and Mariah, their children got married.
That's right. Somehow, Malvinia and Mariah, who were enslaved as children on the same South Carolina farm and separated when Malvinia was about 8 years old, they were separated as she was shipped off to a farm in Georgia. Somehow, astonishingly, you know, some 20 years later, they were able to reconnect and rediscover each other in another part of Georgia, in the county of Bartow County, Georgia, which is northern Georgia. And it must have been amazing, but it was the kind of thing that newly freed African Americans all over the South were trying to do. They were desperately, if you look at the records at the time, the Freedmen's Bureau, which helped newly freed slaves, you know, those records describe people desperately seeking transportation to find a child who they heard was in this town or that town or a sister.
People putting money up. The one couple you mentioned about putting $100, which is like an immense amount of money for someone in a newspaper to try
That's
to find
right.
a child. But, you know, you and I are both parents. And, I mean, I you know, to have your child taken away from you,
and I think that's one of the things, you know, when we dig into this history, sometimes we think of slavery and, you know, the Civil War and Reconstruction and its aftermath as something consigned to history books. But, you know, they were real people like you and me enduring this kind of experience, this kind of agonizing. I think there's no other way to describe losing a child in that way as other than agonizing experience. And Malvinia was lucky enough to reconnect with this woman. They were both women when they found each other from her past.
Mm-hmm.
And then, right, and then Malvinia's son, Dolphus, married Mariah's daughter, Alice, and the families were brought together in that way.
His brother, I'm going to read a little from about Adolphus. This is from the book Rachel Swarms wrote, American Tapestry, the story of the black, white, multiracial ancestors of Michelle Obama. His full name was Adolphus Theodore Shields, and he was something of a ladies' man. He was strikingly handsome with piercing brown eyes, an aquiline nose, olive skin, and an irrepressible sense of confidence. In the rustic hamlets of rural Georgia, he must have been hard to miss. In another time, he might have been a college-educated minister or a commanding politician, an influential man who could sway legions of supporters and congregants with his rumbling voice and easy charisma. But Dollfuss came of age in the South in the last decades of the 19th century when the powers that be were methodically and violently repressing black men and women. For him and for the members of his generation, the doors of opportunity were slamming shut. In 1880, just 15 years after emancipation, Dollfuss was living in the rough farm country of northern Georgia near the town of Cartersville. I mean, people had to deal with such things as, you know, if we talk about voting issues right now, they had to deal with voting, of paying tax, having to be able to read, they had to be able to read different documents in order to vote, and they had to own, you know, 40 acres and the mule and would have $500. But today we have voting problems where I'm not sure if you're familiar with the issue around identification being needed now.
Right, right. And there are people who make these comparisons to the past and today and say, you know, we have to, the right to vote is something that African Americans have fought for. And they compare, you know, this kind of time to that kind of time. Though I think we can't really, if you read the history, we can't really make those comparisons because you had at the same time in the late 1800s, you know, the Klan on the move literally shooting and killing African Americans who were trying to vote. But it that period, which Michelle Obama's ancestors like Dollfuss, her great-great-grandfather, were coming of age, was a particularly painful time because immediately after slavery, African Americans did have the right to vote, and they did see black people become lawmakers in the state legislatures, even in Congress.
Oh yeah, so we can't make the that it was all, you know, dark and gloom, because there are many stories in this book and many other historical books talking about African Americans coming out to vote, really, you know, working together.
That's right.
You know, it was, you know, there was just ups and downs and hills and
valleys,
I think, in history. There were times where we as a people, right, were very high and able to, her ancestors were fighters. I mean, even regardless of all the things that were going on, the men and the women were very successful. Several of the women had their own stores. One was a seamstress. Was making clothes. I forgot which ancestor that was.
Yes, no, it was Dollfuss's daughter, Pearl, who moved to Cleveland and opened a dress shop where she specialized in children's dresses, actually.
So,
and there
yeah,
are many,
and then even before then, there were many
there
people
many
who were successful in her family. I'm sorry, Rachel, are you still there?
I'm still here. There were also many seamstresses in the family, aside from Pearl as well.
Oh, yes, there were. Now, what do you think the hardest part of writing the book was for you?
You know, it really was, you know, the challenge is, well, there are many of them, but, you know, how to tell a story where it is so difficult to find records, particularly for the period of slavery. That was a big challenge. How do you tell a story where, you know, so much of the history is shrouded in silence because people, both black and white, in the First Lady's family decided to turn their backs on the past? And then the other thing, too, which was challenging is, you know, there are a lot of people in Mrs. Obama's family tree, you know. How do you pick and choose? You know, and I tried as best I could to...
Did you have a favorite ancestor or somebody that somehow, I mean, you mentioned Phoebe. Was there any other individuals?
Phoebe, I was really drawn to Phoebe. I was also very drawn to Dollfuss's brother Henry, I have to say, who never achieved the kind of success that his older brother had, but stayed. He was the Melvinia's son who didn't leave her, who stayed with her and tried his best to help that extended family. He was very unlucky. And
he was, like, tragic. I almost wish he could have his own novel, in a sense.
He really was.
One of his wife died on him, and the other one went away. And then, one of his nephews, and this was a credit to his love, left him all the money, and instead of, you know, going to gamble it, he, you know, helped his family. So he was a family man.
He was.
Dolphus left Alice.
I know.
and even he was doing well, but she was struggling, which was unnecessary because he was doing so well, but he didn't really help Alice, it seems, with the kids. He was more, I guess, like a firefly to the light. And
yeah, they were, these people like us were, you know, complicated people. You know, they had their ups and downs, their good sides and their bad sides, too.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. I was speaking with Rachel L. Swarns. She wrote the book American Tapestry, the story of the black, white, and multiracial ancestors of Michelle Obama. I'll be giving away a copy of this book, so you want to follow at Joy Keys and become a fan of Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, check out Rachel's website, rachelswarns.com, and follow her on Twitter, Rachel Swarns, on Twitter to learn about where she's going to be. Where are you going to be doing a reading next?
My next reading is going to be in Baltimore on Wednesday at 6:30 at the Enoch Pratt Library.
Oh, that's a popular one because the other author I had on earlier, she's going to be there as well. So everybody check her out Wednesday. Yeah, different day. But you'll be there Wednesday. You said the 18th at 6:30.
That's right.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's something we didn't get a chance to talk about, but the history of Baltimore and how it had such a wonderful history and the African Americans gave a vote. And then I thought about the show The Wire and the drug wars and things like that. But people have to read the book. There's so much in this book that we can't talk about it in 20, 25 minutes. So follow me at Joy Keys. Become a fan on Facebook so you can win a copy of the book, American Tapestry. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have a wonderful Saturday.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I just got off the phone with Rachel L. Swarns, New York Times journalist, but now author, American Tapestry. Follow her on Twitter, at Rachel Swarns, that's S-W-A-R-N-S. Or check out her website, rachelswarns.com, to learn more about her and where she's going to be. She'll be reading at the Pratt Library in Baltimore, July 18th at 6:30, so you can check her out there. But I'll be giving away a free copy, so follow at Joy Keys. Become a fan on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. You can send me an email if you have any questions or comments, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. You have a wonderful weekend, a wonderful week. Try to stay cool. I tune in next Saturday. I'll be speaking live from Belgium with author Chika Unigwe about her book. So you want to tune in next Saturday. That's going to be at 9 a.m. Have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you so much.